Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante along with Andrew P. Shea. Andy, how are we doing this week?
I'm doing great, Jimmy. How are you?
I am very good. But you know what, Andy? I've been in Pennsylvania all week. The weather's been great, but I haven't been golfing down south like somebody I know.
So my wife and I are in Charleston, South Carolina. I'm not going to hide anything. My son graciously booked his father a round at the Ocean Course at Kiawa, which is where the 2021-2012 PGA were both held there. The U.S. Open's coming there. They've hosted two Ryder Cups. So he got me a tee time at the Ocean Course earlier this week, and with a caddy in the whole nine yards. It's a destination. It's a bucket list. It's an experience. If you're a golfer and love the game, and you know it's not cheap, but it was unbelievable, Jimmy.
Well worth it, huh?
Well worth it. I've played on some elite courses. I've played in Scotland on some of the Rota courses. I've played U.S. Open courses. This one is a memorable, difficult golf course.
Well, you said you also had a little bit of a breeze going, too?
No, they weren't. It wasn't a breeze. It was like, so you play out a Seaside Links course, all the great ones in Scotland. And, of course, this one is a great one done by Pete Dye. They kind of route you out, and then they come back. Well, the back nine goes out for 10, 11, 12, and 13. You go out, out, and out. Then you turn and literally come back. 14, 15, 16, 17, 18. Dead into the wind. 4 and 5 club win, Jimmy. 140 each yard shot. I'm hitting hybrid as hard as I can, which is a 210-yard club for me.
I was just going to say, what would you normally hit from that distance?
I'd hit either a hard 9 or a soft 8. And I'm telling you, my caddy said, look, with this wind, which is 4 or 5 clubs, he said par is not a realistic score. Like, I made a 7 on 16. It's a par 5 double bogey. I was ecstatic to make a 7, which is a double bogey. That's how hard it was. The 18th hole, which it said on the card, it was playing 364 yards. Driver, hybrid, still had 75 yards left and killed both of them.
Wow. And I know, Andy, I golf with Andy. That's not typical for Andrew P. Shea. All right, Andy, I'm just glad you had a great time. Let's shift courses here. No pun intended. Let's hit football a little bit.
Let's do it.
As is typical, we give you the last word of the week. But Penn State, Bowling Green, a tough first half for that Penn State defense. They better than what Notre Dame did. They came away with a win. Give me your overview takeaways from Penn State, Bowling Green.
Yeah, so the Bowling Green quarterback, let's just call, that guy was dropping dimes, right? Like, he was throwing laser dimes all over the Penn State defense in the first half. But they were also running the ball down their throats and converting on third down. That defense got knocked over sideways and had to, like, get itself up off the deck and figure out what was going on. They did not tackle well overall. Generally, they did not look like they were prepared half the time. When the ball was snapped, they looked like they were, you know, yinging when they were should have been yanging and yanging when they should have been yinging. They deserved to be where they were at halftime because, again, Bazelak was throwing absolute dimes all over the place. He was in rhythm. He was committed to what he was doing, and his receivers were open, and he was throwing the ball on schedule, on time, to the absolute perfect spot. But you have to give credit to the Penn State defense. I mean, that's a haymaker to your, you know, to your ego, to your confidence, to your, you know, ability to believe in what you're doing that day, that is a, that is some serious, you know, uppercuts and, you know, combination, you know, punches to the gut and face. They took some hard knocks, climbed off the deck, and made themselves relevant in the outcome of the game in the second half. You know, for so long, Penn State's defense has carried so much water up the hill for this team. They weren't the, they did not decide the outcome of this game, but at least they had made it more relevant in the second half. It didn't force the offense staff to score, you know, three touchdowns to win the game.
And, you know, Andy, I appreciated James Franklin in this week's press conference conceding that tackling was the biggest, big issue. There were other issues, obviously, but tackling was a huge issue because there's no excuse for that. The other part to this, Andy, was Bowling Green came into this with what I thought was a tremendous game plan, and they stuck to it, and they executed it. It was the short passing game. It was get rid of the ball quickly. And this quarterback, and I'm not sure people are aware of this, but this Connor Bazelak, he had time at Missouri before he was at Indiana. So this is a guy with both Southeast Conference and Big Ten experience, Andy. And he's been around. I believe this is his sixth year. So he's like 24 years old.
Right.
And this is an experienced hand. And here was the statistic, because I saw this from the game chart. Not passing beyond behind the line of scrimmage and not passing beyond 10 yards. From the line of scrimmage to 10 yards out, he was 17 for 22. That's pretty good, Andy. So that short passing game, it was the game plan, and they executed it.
He was 15 of his first 17 in that zone, Jimmy. So, you know, he only completed two of his last five passes of those things. He was, they attacked Penn State's linebackers, right? That was the plan, to keep it short, fast, and sweet and attack the Penn State linebackers and make them cover and eliminate any pressure from the middle and off the sides from the Penn State defensive line. And Penn State's linebackers had no answer for the tight end over the middle for the first half. That play was money. I mean, I didn't think I'd see them give up 300 yards after what they did to West Virginia for the rest of the month of September. I didn't think they'd give up 300 yards in a game for the rest of the month. They gave up almost 300 yards in a half. I still say this is a 70-30 proposition in my book. I have to give 70% of the credit this to Bowling Green, Jimmy. You're 100% right. The plan, the execution, the commitment to it, and Connor Bazelak was just, come on, you got to call a spade, Penn State fans. That guy was dropping dimes on you. When a guy is dropping dimes on you like that, you just hold on for dear life and hope it doesn't continue for all four quarters. It did not continue for all four quarters, and Penn State's defense got its footing much better in the second half. But, you know, it's never bad to post a victory when you get slapped around a little bit, right? Like that Penn State defense got a little bit of humble pie and a little bit slapped around. And I think this can help them in the long run. But, you know, Scott Loeffler, the head coach of Bowling Green, offensive-minded guy, he laid down some tape for everybody else in the Big Ten to chew on about how to attack Penn State's defense in 2024.
He really did. And it's an old saying, you know, it's great to have teachable moments, Andy, but you'd rather do that after a win than after a loss. I think this team got a wake-up call, and they are not alone in the country. We're going to talk about that more in the next segment. But let's flip to the other side. Penn State's offense, pretty much the only people who stopped their offense was themselves. A drop, some penalties, a really, really bad interception by Drew Aller. I apologize for that being my first thing I bring up for Drew Aller, because I thought he was wonderful the rest of the game. And this offense does seem to, Andy, have gotten over that, gee, where are the explosive plays?
So the offense, I think what I learned from the Bowling Green game from Penn State's offense, first of all, I thought they played really well. I know the interception, you're right. I thought the offense played really well. I think this Andy Kotelnicki, which is what I kind of suspected all along, this offense is going to be built around those running backs and the tight end, right? That tight end, he's a weapon, right? He's uncoverable in certain matchups in space. And the combination of the running backs, the tight end, and Drew Aller sort of commanding. Remember we talked about in the offseason, I want to see Drew Aller have some command and control of this offense. We're starting to see that. Would you agree, Jimmy? I'm seeing it. Are you seeing the exact same thing I'm seeing? Oh,
most definitely. This is a different Drew Aller. The things that we saw last year, and I'm not alone in this. A lot of people were saying it. The issues were between the ears, that confidence level. Correct. He now seems he has swagger now.
Yep.
He did not have swag last year.
And he's a willing runner. That's way more important than anything else is, you know, you've always heard about it. Well, he's running, but he's not that athletic. He is an engaged, confident, willing runner with the football. It's adding a different dimension to this offense, particularly in the red zone, more than anything that I think it's inherently structural going to help them. And he's an option now in the red zone, and I think that is part of this offense, and I think that's really important. I think he's had two fantastic games to kick off the year, and I thought the offense did its part Saturday about 90% of the way home in what you want from an offense.
And, Andy, you know, because you've been here with me, listening to me say this, you can't run those option plays and never, never, never let the quarterback run it. Guess what? He actually ran it a couple times, which was fantastic. And I'll make one other, and he scored a touchdown off that.
Correct.
The other thing I will point out, Andy, is when he scrambles, I felt a year ago, there was always that slight hesitation. It wasn't that he's physically slow, but he hesitated before making the decision to escape. He doesn't hesitate anymore. He sees the hole, sees a first down, boom, he goes. What's most important is making that decision quickly. Go ahead.
The game has slowed down, and he is speeding up. That's exactly what is happening, Jimmy.
Yep, that's a perfect way to put it, Andy. He's and it's made him so much better a quarterback than he was a year ago. All right, Andy, that's it. That's our follow-up for the first quarter on last week's game. We're going to talk a little more general about college football when we come back.
Reputation is everything. Hi, I'm Matt Nobby, general manager of Bobby Rahal Honda State College, and we're proud of the reputation we've built with our customers. We're not just here to sell you a new car. We support you through every mile of your Honda ownership with benefits like free state inspections and a complimentary loaner vehicle. We'll even wash and vacuum your car when it's in for service. Our reputation is car buying made simple and great service after the sale. Stop by our West College Avenue showroom today or go online at BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com.
It's quarter number two on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number two. He's Andy Shea. I'm Jim Galante. We spent quarter number one with our final thoughts on Penn State Bowling Green. I wanted to hit you up, Andy, with a few more things going on in college football. First thing, just kind of the segue from the Penn State Bowling Green game. We talked about Connor Bazelak, and he was, I think, the difference for Bowling Green. He was the key to their game. And I think what's also of note, Andy, is a lot of folks, when talking about the transfer portal, talked about the rich getting richer. They would use some of these smaller schools, maybe a MAC school, as a feeder system to the bigger schools. But also, Andy, I think what's happening is it's going the other way, especially at quarterback.
Correct.
I think this Connor Bazelak, he makes Bowling Green's offense a different offense. But we're actually seeing this in other places also. We're seeing the Minnesota kid going to Rutgers. Kyle McCord going from Ohio State to Syracuse. There are quarterbacks now getting a chance to play because they're going down a level. And I think that's giving some of those schools a fighting chance. And Connor Bazelak was Exhibit A over the weekend.
He was one exhibit. I think another a good one. Kyle McCord's a good call. The quarterback transfer portal thing, let's talk about it real quick, Jimmy. It's a two-way street, right? Quarterbacks are divas. They want to play. They all want to play. They all think they can start and make it to the NFL, right? Four-star, five-star, you know, those kind of quarterbacks. And with the transfer portal today, it's not just the rich getting richer at the quarterback position. That's kind of happening, but are you really seeing the rich getting richer at the quarterback position? Is Ohio State that much richer at the quarterback position with Will at quarterback as a pair compared to Kyle? I'm not sure yet, right? But you definitely see the other way where I think, which is the bigger and more relevant going forward, it is providing backbone for second tier FBS programs to step up to another level. These are really elite type recruits, right? And they're ending up after 3 and 4, or maybe, you know, in their fifth year playing. How happy is Syracuse that Kyle McCord, he's got like 900 yards passing or something already, Jimmy?
They're thrilled with him. In fact, the coach at Syracuse said he's going to send champagne to Ryan Day.
Correct.
Because they got him. And Andy, you have a situation where it's not a case where the big guys are going without. They just always – Ohio State brings in like four-star or a five-star guy every year. They can't all play.
Correct.
So right now, you know, Syracuse is thanking Ohio State. Well, so is Texas. Remember, Quinn Ewers started out at Ohio State. And guess what, Andy? Yeah. Next year, there's going to probably be two more Buckeye quarterbacks who are going to be in the portal going somewhere else.
I know they lost this week, and thank goodness they did, but they are a little better off for it. Iowa, right? Former Michigan quarterback. Got hurt last year, had a decent – I know they lost to Iowa State this week. Thank goodness, right? Like, we don't talk about Iowa anymore as being part of the Big Ten playoff picture. But that is another good example. I just think you're going to see more of the high-level recruit quarterbacks spreading out at different venues across the country and having this kind of impact, then you're going to see the two or three quarterbacks end up at Georgia, Ohio State, Alabama, et cetera, you know, going up and making that much of a difference. I think the quarterback position umbrellas its way down instead of shooting its way up when it comes to the transfer portal.
And I know some of it does go the other way. We saw that last year with Oregon and Washington. They got quarterbacks from Auburn and from Indiana, and good for them, and it succeeded, but it is distributing the talent. But and the other one, we mentioned also in quarter number one, Andy, that Penn State, they were able to learn their lessons, hopefully, with the win. Not everyone could say that in the top 10, Andy. Notre Dame went down to a MAC team after being a big favorite. So that probably took a lot of heat nationally off Penn State. Notre Dame, this is, by the way, the third time Marcus Freeman has lost a game at home where he was more than a 16.5-point favorite, Andy.
Yeah, they lost to Marshall 2 years ago, I think it was, right?
Yep.
They've lost to Marshall. This one, I don't know what the other one was. And their schedule was
a three and nine Stanford team.
Okay, that one maybe. I'm still not buying that one, but that one's a little bit closer. But you're 100% correct. Their schedule was set up so well for them, Jimmy. They had beaten Texas A&M. Can they make the college football playoffs even if they went out with this loss, Jimmy?
Yes.
Can you realistically take them and put them in the equation with this kind of loss? You think so?
Yes.
Well, I have a hard time doing it.
Let me explain to you why I think that way, Andy. Is if we look back at the four-team playoff, which went on for 10 years over the last decade, what is the first thing they did? They went by losses. If you're undefeated, you're in. If you have one loss, you're in, unless there's too many one-loss teams. If you're a two-loss team, you are out, okay? No matter how much they preach, they look at strength of schedule, anything, forget it. They look at wins and losses. An 11-1 Notre Dame team, except for last year, Florida State,
That was different. That was
as
different.
An exception, they proved the rule. And I think that's still a Notre Dame or a Southeast Conference team or a Big Ten team that goes through the season 11-1, they're going to get in. Now, the question, the bigger question is, if Notre Dame goes 10-2, is there any way in the world you could put them in a tiebreaker over another 10-2 team?
Man, oh man, Jimmy, I understand what you're saying, right? But I'm like, they're 11-1, and are you telling me that a two-loss SEC team or a two-loss Big Ten team, say, take for USC or maybe even Penn State or Ole Miss, are you telling them you're going to take a Notre Dame team that lost to Northern Illinois? Northern yep. Illinois. And yep. if you look at the rest of their schedule, who do they play? They don't
well,
have
USC
any meat
would,
on their bone.
USC is a different game now for them.
Yeah, it's
okay.
the end of the year, right? It's the very last game.
But still, hey, that might be a playoff game where the winner gets in, Andy.
I just think losing to Northern Illinois that way at home has to put you in danger based on your schedule. You're playing Georgia Tech, Virginia, Stanford, Navy, I mean, Purdue. There's no meat on the bone, Jimmy. There's no way to get yourself back into it, but you're not wrong. If they look at it and go, well, they're Notre Dame and they're 11-1, there might be at least one or maybe even two combination Big Ten SEC teams that are 10-2 that we know are better and have played a better schedule that are going to be out, because that is what Notre Dame will do, and that would infuriate me.
It's not about fair, and we all know that. So I'm just saying right now, it's not over for them. So but you know what, Andy? Notre Dame, though, they did take the loss, and they, in my mind, they now have zero margin for error. They can't lose another game. They do have USC, Louisville, Florida State. I know you can make fun of Florida State, but hey, this is a team they lost to, a MAC team, actually right. lost to them. So those games become losable games now. That, to me, is the bigger question. After Notre Dame loses a game like this, do you really see them running the table?
Right. No. Yeah. And that's a fair point, but I think this one's enough for me they fell off my radar. I know they shouldn't have, but I'm like, they're out. I really thought, based on their schedule, like in my mind, they're out. But, you know, just because I'm watching the SEC and I'm watching the Big Ten, and I'm like, man,
did you really let's go back in the time machine 1 week prior to this game against Northern Illinois. I looked at Notre Dame's schedule and I didn't say, oh, here's some sure losses, but I didn't see Notre Dame running the table and going 12-0 either.
No. And I think I could see them I could have seen them winning 11 games, right? Like, looking at their schedule, you're like, they could win 11 games, right? Like, it could be 11-1. Maybe they lose to Louisville. Maybe they lose to USC, quality football team. But you can say at that point they have a quality football loss. Notre Dame losing to Northern Illinois is not a quality football loss. That is where my head is, and I'm like, okay, if they lose another game, then please God definitely keep them out.
That's my point. Then it's over for them. Then right. it's over. You can't have two losses. You can't go into the tiebreaker and win the tiebreaker
right.
after a loss to a MAC team. You just can't do it, Andy. But again, it's still Notre Dame. They go 11-1, and you know that's how they get into it. But it also brings up, Andy, you know, there's some other teams out there who had some close calls, and Penn State wasn't the only one. Oregon had another close call. Alabama had a close call, Andy. It was a one point or one score game in the fourth quarter. That's crazy.
Very early in the fourth quarter, and then Alabama found its footing. Oregon was four more quarters of like, what in the world is going on with Oregon? And, you know, I think they've fallen measurably. They're winning their games, though, Jimmy. They're winning these football games, and they have a chance to figure it out. What about Michigan? Is Michigan off the radar?
Yes.
And I mean, that was Texas. That was Texas, Jimmy. So that's a quality football loss, right? Texas is a really good team. Now, they got woodshedded, right? Like, they were hardly competitive. But I don't know. What's worse, getting woodshedded by Texas or losing to Northern Illinois? I think getting woodshedded by Texas, because that's a quality football loss.
But here's the thing with Michigan. They still have on their schedule USC, Oregon, and Ohio State.
Yeah.
This could be a very easily a four-loss Michigan team, Andy. Very, very easily. We are going to find out so much. And by the way, it's in a couple weeks, September 21st, Michigan is home to USC. That's a big one. All right, that's it for quarter two. Up next, we ask Andy. Stay tuned.
Reputation is everything. Hi, I'm Matt Nobby, General Manager of Bobby Rahal Honda State College, and we're proud of the reputation we've built with our customers. We're not just here to sell you a new car. We support you through every mile of your Honda ownership with benefits like free state inspections and a complimentary loaner vehicle. We'll even wash and vacuum your car when it's in for service. Our reputation is car buying made simple and great service after the sale. Stop by our West College Avenue showroom today or go online at BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com.
Let's get back to the action on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number three. He's Andy Shea. I'm Jim. You know what quarter three means. It's time for your questions. It's time to ask Andy. If you want to ask Andy a question, real easy, just download our app, Keystone Sports. You see the Ask Andy button, and away you go. Before we get started, though, with the questions, we were talking about this between segments, Andy. It's interesting. We didn't even mention it yet. Penn State's on a bye week this week.
I know.
Third week of the season.
I don't like it. It's almost like you get your juices flowing, you get moving, you're learning a little bit. Defense got it, you know, kind of got, you know, sucker punched and beat up a little bit last week. Their nose is bloody. You're like, how are they going to respond to that bye week? Slow it down, take a break. And I'm like, if you're Penn State, I think you like it. But on the other side, I'm like, eh.
If you're Penn State coaches, you like it, Andy, because it's a teachable 2 weeks.
Right.
If you're a Penn State player, you don't like this. You want to get right back on the horse, and you've got to wait an extra week. So, all right, let's get to our questions. Let's start with our buddy Matt in Massachusetts. Now, you're going to have to put on your thinking cap for this one for Matt.
Matt in Massachusetts. I'm on.
He says, Jim and Andy, in your opinion, what was the best / your favorite non-conference season opener? He says it could be a cupcake game, tune-up game, whatever. Give your choice that made you laugh, cry, or jump out of your seat in happiness. Now, Andy,
is he talking about this year, or is he talking about Penn State?
I'm thinking he's talking about Penn State. So okay. I'm going to give you a chance to think about this a little bit. Because I've seen the question. So I'm going to throw out a couple of them for you. But I'm going to break Matt's rule a little bit. He said non-conference. And I'm going to include conference games because those were the ones that made an impression.
Right.
And do you realize how often, I'm going away games also. But in the James Franklin era, do you remember this? First game was in Ireland. They beat Central Florida.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Remember it was an opener where Temple sacked Hackenberg 10 times and really took Matt Rule's Temple Owls, State to the woodshed.
Naeem Wortman was lost for the season that game. Yeah, I remember that now. Yeah, on special teams.
Indiana.
Oh, the
quarterback still. Yeah. Michael Penix still hasn't reached the pylon. Yeah,
he didn't.
And he got the two-pointer. And more recently, in 21 and 22, they opened on the road with road wins, very close games against Wisconsin and Purdue by less than one score. So, and I know this, I didn't follow Matt very well, but I'm going to throw out one more opener. And it was, I had to look up what year it was. It was 2008. I don't know if you remember this. They played Oregon State, which was, to me, I loved it because they weren't playing a MAC school or Delaware or someone like that. It was a team with a pulse. And I remember having beautiful weather. I was there actually Friday, the day before the game. I was in town and bumped into some Oregon State fans who were so excited to be there. Beaver Stadium was like a bucket list item for them. And Penn State ended up playing really well. They beat Oregon State 45-14, and it was a decent Oregon State team that finished that season 9-4. So, Andy, that was me stalling, giving you some time to think.
I've had plenty of time to think.
All right.
I think I have one for you. I please, and this is on off the cuff, so I hope I'm right. I can't remember the year. I want to say it was like, Arizona at Beaver Stadium, LeVar Arrington. Arizona was highly ranked, thought very highly, you know, regarded coming into the game. It was a titanic matchup, and Penn State took them out behind the woodshed and just decimated them. And is that the LeVar Leap game? Am I correct?
No. LeVar Leap was Illinois.
Okay.
That Arizona game, I think Arizona was ranked top five.
Yeah, I remember Arizona was really good, and it was so much surrounding that game, and Penn State just beat the crap out of them.
Oh, yeah, and I don't know if that was the opener or a second or third week, but it was obviously early in the season, another beautiful day. And I remember Penn State, I believe, running that quick jet sweep kind of thing where the guy looks like he's in motion. You get the snap, quick handoff, and it just really, they took it to Arizona. Great memory, Andy. That was a good one. All right, let's move on to Steve in Huntington Valley, who says, Andy, should I be more encouraged that Omari Evans had two catches in each of the first two games, or should I be more discouraged that his four total catches are second on the team among wideouts, and he's the only wideout to catch at least one pass in both games?
Yeah, more encouraged. That's a very easy answer, because the wide receiver position, it's still going to kind of be broken all season. It's a serious men at work in progress. Serious men at work. Okay, maybe you found a wide receiver one. He's good. Teams are going to start covering him. The fact they found somebody else to catch some other balls, it's not Julian Fleming. It's not Liam Clifford yet. It's just going to take a ton of time for anything at the wide receiver, because it was starting at such a low level. It's going to take any time to have an impact. Plus, Andy Kotelnicki has better toys at tight end and running back to play with.
Yeah, well, and
that's that, it.
And I think the other thing, Andy, to be aware of is how few passes they threw in these two games. So it was harder to distribute it to a lot of people when you're not on the field. And to James Franklin's credit, he's talked about this. The defense is part of the problem in that case, where they gave up long drives. I mean, in the first half of this game, Bowling Green had two 10-play drives, okay, just in the first half. And Penn State's offense just didn't have enough plays to distribute it. I think in the first game, Drew Aller had 17 passes. This game, he had 20, okay. The total number of passes for the first two games is 37 passes. For a lot of teams, that's one game's worth. Just to give you an idea, Connor Bazelak, he had 39 passes. He had more passes in this one game than Drew Aller had in two, Andy. I think that's a big part of it. All right, let's see. All right, how about this? Greg from Anvil says, from what you have seen of the Lions with this bye coming up, which former Penn State player would you love to have right now to help on this year's team? You could pick one for the offense and one for the defense if you're so inclined. Your choices could be from any area. And again, Andy, I can give you the minute to think because you don't need time? Let me see if you I got a feeling one of your choices is going to be the same as mine. Go ahead and do it.
I'm going to give you first rite of passage, Jimmy. I have two that jumped into my head right away.
Go ahead.
First one is Chris Godwin.
Ooh, okay.
Ooh, you like that one, do you, Jimmy?
Well, you'll see when I give you my pick, but go ahead.
That was the first guy could get himself open, could stretch the field a little bit, had a big catch radius, precision route runner, and knew how to make himself open underneath and available to catch a ball. Plus, he could run down the field and make a big catch and a circus catch because he was great at winning the ball in the air. Chris Godwin would be the first one to help on the other side. I'd leave Wallace out there and put Godwin on the other side. I think that might solve your problems a little bit at the wide receiver position. That was my first one.
And on defense?
I didn't think of one on defense. I don't think they need any help on defense. I'm good on defense.
Okay, let me give you my two names. And I thought of Godwin, but I went with my first instinct, okay? I instantly thought, like, I know some people might say Saquon Barkley. Well, you don't need help at running back. Nope. My first wide receiver instinct was Allen Robinson.
He was my second choice, Jimmy. I was Chris Godwin first. Allen Robinson was second.
I did pick out a defensive guy. You want to guess who I picked out?
Interesting. Does he play for the Cowboys?
Yes, he does.
Well, duh, Jimmy. That was just a wild guess, but yeah, if you could be any defense in the country, you say, hey, can I have one player back? Can I have one player to play for us that would help? That's a great question, by the way. Fantastic question.
It was a fun question. I liked it. All right, let's go to Bert in Claysburg, who says, Andy, I feel like the 12-team playoff has devalued the regular season. Previously, if Notre Dame had lost to a MAC team, their playoff hopes would have been over. Would have made that game life or death. Life or death. What do you think?
I already said it. Notre Dame's goose should be cooked. I agree.
How about the bigger question, Andy? No, does the 12 team?
I don't think it waters down the regular season. I actually think it adds in my opinion, it adds depth to the regular season. It makes how you perform over 12 games rather than you just could win 10 or 11. Look, we all agree there's going to be some 10-2 teams that are going to make the playoffs. How did you get to 10-2? What was your road to 10-2? And who are those teams and what kind of road did they navigate? That's why the regular season is more relevant. Maybe there's a 9-3 team that makes it, Jimmy. It's how you got there, and I think that's what makes the regular season more relevant in the two power conferences. Sorry,
two quick thoughts about that. One is that 2016 Penn State team that started 2-2.
Correct.
They were eliminated from the playoffs as soon as they lost their second game.
Correct.
They rattled off, 9 wins in a row, won the Big Ten championship, beat Ohio State, and by the way, Andy, just as a side note, they beat the spread in all 9 of those games. Just saying.
Nice.
Just saying.
Nice sidebar.
And the other thought, and I'll use, Bert's example of Notre Dame. All of a sudden, Andy, you mentioned it. I do believe they. It is the last game of the year that they play USC. You know what? That could be a play-in game for the playoffs. Where otherwise, you don't think of either one of those teams making a 4-team playoff. But with a 12-team playoff, boy, those last couple games in November, They're going to be exciting, Andy. All right, that's it for quarter three. Lots more to go in quarter four. Stay tuned.
Reputation is everything. Hi, I'm Matt Nobby, General Manager of Bobby Rahal Honda State College, and we're proud of the reputation we've built with our customers. We're not just here to sell you a new car. We support you through every mile of your Honda ownership with benefits like free state inspections and a complimentary loaner vehicle. We'll even wash and vacuum your car when it's in for service. Our reputation is car buying made simple and great service after the sale. Stop by our West College Avenue showroom today or go online at BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com.
We head to the home stretch in quarter number four on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, which quarter number four. He's Andy. I'm Jim. We're talking mostly Penn State football. Tell you what, it was a nice set of questions we had this week in Ask Andy, wasn't it?
Really good ones, Jimmy. I thought two of them were outstanding, and they were all really good, but two of them jumped out at me. I was like, wow, those are really good questions.
Well, I think the question about who would you add from a former Penn State team, that was a really fun question. But I also think that this discussion about devaluing the regular season, this is going to be an ongoing discussion.
Amen.
From now through the end of the season. Yep. And I think to Burke's point, and a lot of people will say that, Notre Dame should have been eliminated by losing to a MAC team. And there's going to be that kind of conversation. But I think there's just going to be so many great games coming up. And even, like I mentioned, Michigan plays USC, which I know is also part of this, you know, the conference is changing so much, adding teams.
Yep.
But we've got so many great games coming up. I love that. All right, Andy, we typically look forward to the next game, but we've got another week to wait because it's a bye week, which it kind of leads to the question, all right, you're part of this coaching staff for Penn State. Where are you looking? Let's start with the defensive side for a change because, Andy, they did not look good at all in that first half against Bowling Green.
Yeah, and this – so what I'm thinking of is, like, what do they need – they're on a bye, right? Like, we're like, oh, my gosh, we have a bye already, but they're on a bye. They played eight quarters. What do they need to really kind of be – what do they need to go back in the shop and do some work on, right? Both sides of the ball, where do they need to shop? You want to start with the defense. Very first, they got to take it back in the shop and figure out how to get those two guys on the end to get more pressure on the quarterback. They have to get more pocket impact coming from the outside. I think they're getting good pressure up the middle. I'm not seeing as much on the outside as I think you're going to need down the road. So I think you need to take, you know, this isn't an indictment on Abdul Carter and Denai Dennis Sutton. I'm not saying they're not playing well. I'm saying I think the defense needs to go back in the shop and figure out a little bit different way how to use those guys a little bit differently to help give them more opportunities to impact the pocket. Look, and Connor Bay's like, he got the ball out like stupid lightning quick, right? And it was on target and it was well thrown. The guy was throwing dimes. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm not saying the end should have sacked him and changed the football game. I'm saying as I watched eight quarters of this, they need some work. They need to workshop. Bringing pressure off the edge to impact the pocket. Penn State really needs to spend some time working on that over these next 2 weeks as they get ready.
You know, Andy, I think that Bowling Green game planned against these defensive ends by getting the ball out quickly, like we talked about. And this is where I wonder, I feel like the defense against Bowling Green was pretty vanilla. You know, they didn't think they needed to do anything very exotic.
Good point.
But I wonder if in this kind of game, when you have teams doing that, what I always appreciated was what Manny Diaz would do and bring in these exotic blitzes. You know, there's seven guys on the line of scrimmage and you have no idea who's coming and where they're coming from. You know, I saw... You know, and I've talked about this play often for different reasons. This is where KJ Winston ended up with an interception.
Yep.
They literally had both cornerbacks from the blitz from the same side of the field.
Yep.
Which is just kind of crazy. And it was instantly the quarterback said, hey, if they're coming from the left, that's my outlet. That's where to go. Well, guess what? KJ Winston is rotating that way because he knows it too, Andy. And that's how you get an interception.
You're 100% correct. And the adjustments were made at halftime. Here's the thing, right? And I think I'm not beating Tom Allen up. I'm not picking on him. But he's getting his feet wet as a defensive coordinator again, right? He was a head coach for what, 4 or 5 years? He's getting his feet wet. I'm going to call it what it is. He was slow to adjust, Jimmy. He will get faster, right? Like Manny was a mad scientist and he was quick to adjust, like quarter to quarter. He was like every couple series, he was making adjustments. It was clear in the first half with what Bowling Green was doing that Penn State needed to make some sort of on the fly, quick, subtle adjustments and some changes. They made them all at halftime. I was a little surprised because I know Tom Allen is a good coordinator and experienced. He might be a little rusty at making those adjustments on the fly. I think he'll be fine going forward, but they were slow to adjust. And I think he needs to be quicker on the trigger on the adjustments.
Well, here's a little, this will probably sound a little bit excuse making. I think it is. KJ Winston went out in the first half. So
Correct. When
you need to make an adjustment, you're doing that with probably your second best defensive player. But I think you're right, Andy.
He'll get better.
I one series you say, okay, fine. But I expected things to change after the one series. Now, the other thing that I think I was concerned about in that first game was tackling. Okay. They didn't tackle well. Some of it was they didn't wrap. And I have Tony Rojas is so impressive, but there were multiple times in these first two games where he looked to blow somebody up instead of wrapping them, and he didn't take the guy down. So that's my issue. You got a couple weeks. Focus on tackling.
Yeah, that's a good call. But it's also there is a little bit of a wrap-up problem. And they've been – last year they were – remember we would talk about it. We were glowingly like, oh, my gosh, they tackle so well in space. Like 9 out of 10 tackles, they get them to the ground in space. I think they're a little – overly aggressive. They're running by more than I thought they would. They're overrunning, or they're getting out of position to make a tackle. You know what I mean? Like
lacking gap integrity.
They're just a little bit off on their tackling. Yeah, Tony Ross wrapped the guy up, and go watch Michael Parsons tackle, by the way. Get the guy to the ground instead of trying to deliver a big hit. But I think they're just a little bit off on their tackling, and I don't know, is it going to be better? That's a lot of new guys in that secondary. Safeties are still really good. I think the tackling will be fine. It's the linebackers, Jimmy. That's what we're talking about. It's the linebackers that need the most work on their tackling. Let's just call it what it is.
And they were the ones that were probably being picked on as far as coverage also. All right, Andy, we talked about going over a couple things on both defense and offense, but unless you have something real quick, another one for the defense. I want to switch to the offensive side of the ball and say, okay, it's been pretty good. We've seen a lot of explosive plays. What do you want to see going forward?
You have to start integrating more of the receivers. Like Omari Evans has got 4 catches. Let's get Julian Fleming 2 catches. Let's get Liam Clifford a catch, right? And this is an Andy Kotelnicki problem. This is execution on the field and the players executing. Because I know Andy's calling their number. Get them, just get one more wide receiver to get a couple more catches. I don't have the expectation that these wide receivers are going to have a huge impact on the outcome of games. But if you're only going to be thrown to one wide receiver and then, you know, maybe once or twice thrown to another, despite how ridiculously good Tyler Warren is, you're going to figure out a way to cover 2 guys. They're going to need a third or a 4th option. The running backs, they're a pretty good 3rd option. Jimmy, what I'm talking about is they need a wide receiver to be a 4th option in this offense. They need one other guy to be the 4th option. Is it Omari? It might be. He's got 4 catches already. Is it Julian Fleming? I would prefer it to be him. Could it be Liam Clifford? I'd be okay with that, but they need another fourth option overall in this offense in the passing game and a second wide receiver to become more crystal clear to them. I think that's something they're looking for too.
I'm saying the same thing, that I want to see, you know, more wide receivers involved. However, I'm going to look at this stat sheet a little bit different. Like I said, Drew Aller has thrown so few passes, 17 in the first game, 20 in the second, for a total of 37 passes, okay?
Correct.
Which you could look at that as a one-game total, okay? If I said in one game that you had Tyler Warren with 11 receptions, you had Omari Evans with 4, you had Trey Wallace with 5 receptions and 117 yards. If I had put it out to you in that way, how much different would it seem? Okay. Obviously, that's over a 2-game span. But again, that would still only be 37 passes, which is not an unusual number for a single game. To your point, I still want to see more from Julian Fleming and something from Liam Clifford, because they were talking about those receivers. But like I said, if you get those kind of numbers from a Trey Wallace, from a Tyler Warren, and Omari Evans is now a factor. And remember, he had, you know, the offensive pass interference took away that reception. A holding penalty took a Trey Wallace reception away. And yep, just a plain old drop by Omari Evans that hit him right in the middle of the chest took away another reception. So I'm not quite sure it's as big an issue as some of the raw numbers would tell you if you look at these games individually. All right, what else do you want to see from the offense, Andy?
What's next for Bo? More Bo.
Mm.
Let's see. Give me a little bit more, bro. Let's start building it in a little. Let's start sprinkling some more salt and pepper in on it. I like him. He's important. I know it was a little less than the first game, but it was still just as intentional, right? Like, for the number of snaps the Penn State offense has, because they didn't have the ball very long because they were doing huge chunk yards, right? It was like, oh, Bo Prabhul is finally out. Well, when would he have played before? They've hardly had the ball, right? And I like what I've seen in his first two games. Let's see a little more sprinkle. That's all I'm saying, Jimmy. I'm not saying, hey, let's get more Bo Prabhul. I'm saying, let's see what you got, Andy. A little more sprinkle on it. Because I know he's got more for him because he's just getting started. And that's what I think you can do in these 2 weeks.
And again, I think he's a victim, Andy, a little bit of the you, Andy. God bless you. I see you sneezing there. Fortunately, you hit your mute button. All right. But he's also a victim of not enough plays. So in this game, the stat sheet, he had 2 carries, 12 yards, no passes. I think, Andy, that, again, he's a victim of just not enough plays on offense. All right, Andy, as usual, went way, way too fast. We are done for the show. Thank you all for listening. Make sure you join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Reputation is everything. Hi, I'm Matt Nobby, General Manager of Bobby Rahal Honda State College, and we're proud of the reputation we've built with our customers. We're not just here to sell you a new car. We support you through every mile of your Honda ownership with benefits like free state inspections and a complimentary loaner vehicle. We'll even wash and vacuum your car when it's in for service. Our reputation is car buying made simple and great service after the sale. Stop by our West College Avenue showroom today or go online at BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com.